Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes, one episode at a time, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is our first return guest, Nicholas Prom. Hi, Nicholas. Welcome back.
Hi, Rob. Glad to be here.
Did you enjoy your R&R in Tokyo?
Oh, I sure did.
That's good.
I may have to take a trip to the VD clinic, but, you know, that's a price to pay. Geez.
Wow. This show took a turn very early on. Anyway, Nicholas is our first return guest. This is very exciting. The ratings for Nicholas's first appearance were so huge, we had him back for this return episode. Of course, although in unlike MASH style, he's playing the same character he played in the previous episode. He's playing Nicholas Prom. So.
Oh, good.
So the episode we're here to talk about is Season 1, Episode 7, Bananas, Crackers, and Nuts. Original air date, November 5th, 1972. Written by Bert Stiler and directed by Bruce Bilson. After a brutal, unending stream of wounded, Hawkeye and Trapper demand some R&R in Tokyo. Henry agrees, and they start to pack. Their glee is interrupted, though, when more wounded arrive, and things are made even worse when afterwards Henry leaves to go to a medical conference. They know that Acting Commander Frank Burns will never give them time off. Hawkeye decides the best way to get some rest is to act crazy, with Trapper as, quote, the only one that can handle him. So he goes all out, rebuffing the advances of Nurse Cutler in public, and even pretending to eat a piece of a North Korean soldier who died. instead of getting R&R, Frank and Hot Lips call in a psychiatrist, Captain Sherman, played by Stuart Margolin, who examines Hawkeye, who still doesn't drop the act. He messes with Sherman's head, even telling him he has a crush on Frank. Henry returns, shocked to learn what's been going on. Sherman wants Hawkeye to get actual psychiatric help, and Frank and Hot Lips start going along with it, figuring this is their chance to get rid of Hawkeye once and for all, referring to Hawkeye as poor Hawkeye, poor sick Hawkeye. When informed of this, Hawkeye reveals it was all an act, but Captain Sherman won't listen. Hawkeye then enlists Radar to help with a plan. He has the signs of the VIP tent and Hot Lips' tent switched, ending with Margaret unknowingly walking in on the sleeping Captain Sherman and getting undressed. Sherman, who once had a relationship with Hot Lips, takes this as all the encouragement he needs and lunges at her. Hot Lips screams for help, alerting the whole camp. Hawkeye, Trapper, Frank, and the rest storm in, and Sherman is left stammering a half-hearted defense. Claiming it was all a frame-up, his case against Hawkeye is now closed. So, Nicholas, what do you think of this one?
Well, first, I should say, when I agreed to do this one, I mistakenly thought was that I agreed to do the previous episode.
Yankee Doodle Doctor, right.
Yes. This is also an episode of MASH.
wow.
No, this one's okay. It's fair to Midland for me. it fits the formula of Trapper and Hawkeye want something, or specifically Hawkeye wants something, can't get it, so they pull a scheme to try and get their way around something, and then complications happen. It's a premise that they'll lean on again and again, and it works here. Stuart Margolin is a fine actor. You'll see him in all kinds of stuff. I don't know if he's ever not creepy and gross, but it's a pretty good one.
I will say that so far of the seven episodes we've covered, this is my least favorite one of the seven for a couple different reasons. First of all, it feels long because of the weird structure, is that it basically at the halfway mark starts over, because the first half is all Hawkeye acting crazy, which is fun to watch because that gives Alan all the chance to just be really loony. And then he has to drop the act when Sherman is like, well, you really are crazy. So then the show kind of starts over with the script being flipped. Now, you could argue, well, that's kind of clever, but to me, it feels like every time I watch this show, it doesn't feel like it's 22 minutes. It feels a lot longer because you're just sort of like starting over. It's like, oh, wow, there's a new story starting.
Yeah. You know what I think happened, Rob? The writers probably had a couple of germs of two different script ideas, and they just kind of sewed them together here. And it works. You know, like, can you see, like, there was maybe a plot like, okay, here's this lecherous psychiatrist that's coming and he's putting the moves on Margaret. Well, let's make him look really bad, and do that. And then the other plot where Hawkeye's trying to get time off by acting crazy is a whole nother ball of wax.
I could see that. I mean, I'm sure that happens often in TV where you have little scraps of ideas and you don't have enough to fill out an episode, but you can jerry-rig something. And I'm glad you mentioned the whole thing about with Captain Sherman having the thing for Margaret. Okay, we have to make... All art deserves to be judged on when it was made. You can't necessarily judge it by the standards of today because things change.
Right.
And you can judge a piece of art by, you know, did it have good intentions? I mean, there are movies, of course, in the 40s where African-American characters are pretty caricatured and they're kind of all like servants and stuff like that. And you could look at a movie back then and say, well, that's pretty offensive. But does the movie have its heart in the right place, or is it really kind of being more nasty and then you can dismiss things depending? MASH, right. I think, for the most part, has its heart in the right place in terms of its views on women and equality. There are times, though, it goes too far.
Yeah,
this is one of the things where it goes too far. The scene where Margaret shows up to the tent, to what she believes is her tent, and gets undressed, and Sherman attacks her. He flat out attacks her, and it's not even like he attacks her thinking this is her playing like some sort of game. It's where she's screaming for him to stop, and he won't stop. And it's played kind of for laughs, and that's tough to watch. The only reason I find it not completely offensive is because they have already established that Margaret Houlihan can handle herself. So Margaret is never in any real danger by any man for the most part because she's so tough.
Right.
I mean, she slaps Sherman across the face and practically knocks him on his ass.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it work. But that last part where he is just so beyond the pale of not listening to what she's telling him, it makes the laughs a little hard to come by. And the fact that the whole episode hinges on that conclusion, is it makes it a little skeevy. You can't help it.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think, for one thing, as you were saying earlier, we should always try to look at art through the lens of when it was created.
Right, exactly.
But that being said, Captain Sherman's behavior is repulsive.
Yeah.
And even more reprehensible is that he is a doctor, a psychiatrist, and the fact that he just switches off his listening tools because he's trying to get laid is disgusting.
Yeah. And what's very strange is that, not to jump ahead, but Stuart Margolin, I don't know why I have sometimes saying that, Stuart Margolin would come back in season two.
And do the same thing.
And play a different character. Dude does the same thing. So it was like they looked at him as like, oh, he's our like sort of proto-rapist.
I mean,
that is, if I was that actor, I would have been like, guys, what are you doing to me over here? I mean, come on, you know?
Like, but I mean, can you not look at Stuart Margolin and kind of see it? I mean, like.
Well, I mean, he's
just easy looking guy.
He was, but he was Angel on the Rockford Files, and they didn't write him as, like, that bad. Like, I know there was something about MASH that they just felt some actors, they just sort of pigeonholed them in these roles, and it's that final scene is hard to watch. And then, of course, there's another whole sequence where part of the thing that Hawkeye plans to convince Captain Sherman that he's crazy is that he admits that he has a crush on Frank. And maybe it's because I love this show and depending and knowing that there's another episode coming in season two,
mm-hmm.
that like the show itself is not suggesting that Hawkeye is crazy because he's in love with Frank. Hawkeye is playing into Captain Sherman's prejudices, and that's different. The show right. is not saying, oh, Hawkeye's crazy because he's, oh, look, Hawkeye's pretending to be gay. That must mean he's crazy. No, he is playing into the idea that Captain Sherman, who's closed-mindedness, because, of course, I think the American Medical Association still considered homosexuality a mental disorder until, like, the 70s or something.
More like until the 80s, I think.
In the 80s? Oh, my God.
I'm not entirely sure about that, but it's either, like, the late 70s or the early 80s where the designation changed.
Staggering.
I minored in psychology in college.
Ugh.
And we did go over this. Whereas, at this time, Captain Sherman would absolutely look at homosexuality as a mental illness. And
right.
So, again, it's that lens thing. Okay. Now, we look at it today as like, well, that's morally reprehensible to think of as a gay person as crazy for just being who they are. But, again, a medical professional at that time would probably believe that it is wholeheartedly.
Right. And it's funny because if Hawkeye just wants to get some R&R,
Yeah.
Like, that's going to get him kicked out of the army if they think he's gay. Like, that's not going to just get him some R&R. He's going to actually be discharged. He's kind of taking it a little too far. But, of course, that's kind of the joke of this. I mean, he's trying to convince Frank and Hot Lips that he's turned into a cannibal at a certain point. And I have to admit, the stack of pancreas line always makes me a little nauseous every time he says it. Yeah. There's just something about that,
though.
That phraseology that just makes me really upset. Yeah.
And there's some good jokes throughout this, but unfortunately the payoff at the end kind of makes all the good jokes we've had building up to it just kind of like forgettable because the end is so awful.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do enjoy the fight between Hawkeye and Trapper where they get mad at each other for not filling up the still, because that actually has just a touch of an edge to it where they really get mad at one another. And I love that they both retreat to their cots and they just stare at each other for like a full, you know, like a full beat. And then Trapper's like, our first fight. And Hawkeye's like, what's happening to us? Like, I love that idea that they recognize, oh, wait a minute, we've crossed the line. We never yell at one another. Yeah. I love. They would repeat this in a season three episode where it turns out that they realize that they're drinking a little too much. Because, of course, this fight is predicated on the fact that they don't have alcohol to drink. So yeah, that's kind of got a darker cast to it, too.
Right, and you brought up a fact I was going to mention. I think the episode in season three where Trapper has got an ulcer.
Oh, right, checkup, yes.
Yeah, and it looks like he's going to get a discharge, and he's saying all his goodbyes. They do have a fight over the still for forgetting to put the stuff in it again. of course you know this. You've seen every episode dozens of times, but... having recently rewatched about the first three seasons, yes, I wanted to bring that one up too.
Yeah. I am curious that we found out that Margaret had a previous relationship with Captain Sherman, which is amazing because that's got to be the only time she's ever had a relationship with someone of her own or lower rank. We've established that Margaret only kind of screws upwards, but here she's actually had a relationship with, maybe it was before they were both in the military, because they talk about them supposedly meeting in San Francisco, so maybe it was pre being enlisted or something.
Well, he said he waited for her somewhere until 4 a.m., and she never came. She said, I said I wouldn't. The impression I got is he had ambitions of getting together with Margaret, and she was never really into him. They know each other from before, but she'd always kind of tried to give him the brush off. That's what I read in this.
That's interesting. I never thought of it, but I'm looking at the dialogue as you're saying that. They talk about meeting in San Diego, but you're right. I may be reading too much into it because she mentions that he's just a friend. So, yeah, maybe so. Maybe that he wants to clearly get with – which would actually tie into the end more of why he goes so far when he thinks she's finally making a play for him. So, and I will admit I did laugh at the one line during that whole scene at the end where she refers to herself as a defenseless young girl. Like, I think that's really funny. That Margaret,
an innocent young girl. It's like, no, wait a second.
An innocent young girl. Like, Margaret's pushing, at the very minimum, 35.
So yeah, not quite she's an adult, and we know Margaret's been around the block a few times.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I thought that line is always funny, Margaret's view of herself. Something else I always wonder about in these episodes where Hawkeye and Trapper plan to go to R&R for a week. How can you run the 477th without them for a week? How do you do that? There's nobody left.
I mean, presumably a real MASH hospital has probably a dozen surgeons.
Right.
And they're rotating out when, you know, combat is lighter and getting some R&R, I would think. But because this is a sitcom television, we have to get a microcosm of everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's only four doctors, so how can you possibly send half the medical staff away for a week? That's like, there's no way.
Because it's the magic of television, Rob.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it has been established. Wounded will show up at the most inopportune, unexpected moments. You can't possibly run the operating room with just Frank and Henry. But, you know, again, you have to kind of just blow past that.
And this is a trope that we'll revisit again and again throughout the series.
Yes.
They'll lean on this. They want to get some R&R and then wounded come in. I think there's another one coming up where Hawkeye doesn't sleep for a couple of days and he's all kind of real punchy throughout the whole episode.
Yes.
Yeah,
he gets all loopy.
Yeah.
I do want to mention, related to Stuart Margolin, he does have another kind of bizarro MASH connection. In 30 Rock, the Tina Fey 30 Rock series, later on we find out that Alec Baldwin's character his father left him at an early age, so we never know who his real biological father is. And it turns out, and it's being played by Alan Alda.
Yay!
And they do a bunch of MASH jokes. But there's an episode where three different actors show up, three different people show up, and they all take blood tests to find out if they're the father of Jack Donaghy. And one of the other actors is Stuart Margolin.
Really?
And I'm like, what a weird, like, I'm pretty sure that Tina Fey didn't hire Stuart Margolin for that connection, because if you were trying to make another MASH connection, you could have someone with a much stronger MASH connection than Stuart Margolin. Like, you would get, like, Mike Farrell or something. But nevertheless, I couldn't help but notice. I was like, and I'm trying to remember, I don't think Alan Alda and Stuart Margolin have any scenes together. I think it's separate scenes. But I have to wonder, like, were they there on the set the same day? And they must be like, hey, man, you know, like, we worked together 35 years ago on MASH. I couldn't help it jumped right out of me.
Right.
Because there are later MASH jokes on 30 Rock related to Alan Alda.
Yeah.
So it was clearly on the writer's mind. But again, it was so funny to see Stuart Margolin show up in that sort of bizarre context.
I'm sure what happened there was, you know, they went to central casting, or they, you know, they put out the call, okay, we need a character actor of a certain age, and who, you know, Stuart Margolin is a pretty prolific character actor. He's like, oh, yep. Well, why don't we get that guy? He's about the right age. It's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Behind the scenes, this episode was directed by Bruce Bilson, who only did this one episode of MASH. If that name sounds familiar, he is the father of Danny Bilson, who produced The Flash, 90s TV series.
Oh.
He directed a bunch of episodes and one episode of The Human Target TV series. So that's a direct connection to comic books. This episode was written by Bert Stiler, who also wrote To Market, To Market, but that's it. These are the only two that he ever did. So the crew behind the scenes didn't last too long on this particular episode. And I have a favorite line. I don't know if you have one, but my favorite line in this episode is not so much a laugh line. It's just a weird line of Hawkeye's that I have found I've incorporated in my life. It's when Captain Sherman insists he's being framed. Hawkeye laughs it off with the deliberately mangled cliche, "You're living in a fool's paranoid." And I have used that way more times than is really healthy. I don't know. And I've said it to people, and they just look at me strangely because what the hell does that even mean? But I just, there's something about it I like. You're living in a fool's paranoid. I'm just delighted by Hawkeye's wordplay.
That is a great – it's such a clever malaprop, you know? I do like that line. I don't know if I have a favorite one from the show. I do love the scene where Radar is kind of pulling one over on Captain Sherman in the mess tent, when he's trying to sell him on the idea that Margaret really is into him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Like, she keeps looking over here whenever you look away.
And he's pointing. He's like, me? You're talking to me? Oh, no, you're talking to me. Yeah, yeah. And every time he turns back, Margaret's not looking at him because, of course, the whole thing's a blind. That is a good – Radar. I love Radar as the wingman for their plots. That's always great.
Yeah. And this is me – this is – more evidence of like my love of the early Radar before it's too much of the naive farm kid, and more like the very knowing, worldly, working the situation kind of character. I really like that version of Radar.
I could see that. He's like a member of the Newsboy Legion or something. He's just like a young kid, but he's scrappy and has all the connections and stuff like that. There is one whole other scene I do like that I genuinely find funny is when Henry comes back and he has the meeting with Captain Sherman and Hawkeye and and Frank and Margaret. And Henry is aghast that they're really taking this seriously, that Hawkeye might be crazy. So he starts telling stories of all the pranks Hawkeye pulled on Frank Burns. And I love the delight by which McLean Stevenson / Henry starts to, he says, you know, remember the time he hung you up in traction 10 feet off the bed? I will never forget the look of terror on your face before you hit the bed. And he's just delighting at telling these humiliating stories about Burns. And one of the, on top of McLean Stevenson's performance, which I just find very funny, I also love the idea that there are all these MASH adventures we've never seen. Like, there's all this stuff that's going on that the viewer never gets to see.
Well, two things about that. One, that really helps sell it as this is a lived-in, real place.
Yep.
And yeah, there's a whole backstory or more stories that we'll never see that you can just imagine.
Yeah, I love that.
I like that a lot. And in that scene, you know, Margaret and Frank are trying to like, yes, Hawkeye's crazy. You should just get him out of here because they don't want Hawkeye around because he undermines their authority.
Right. Yeah, they see it as a good opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's wonderful how Colonel Blake totally douses that and makes them look stupid in front of this visiting captain by talking about all those pranks they pulled on Frank. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. I just it's Henry always has to have that facade that he's the commander, but then he lets it slip, and he just finds it hysterically funny that Hawkeye and Trapper have pulled all this stuff on Frank. He just finds that great, and so I just love the way McLean Stevenson lets it rip. Like, he just thinks it's just Henry just finds it so funny, and he forgets himself. He forgets that he's the commander, and he shouldn't be sort of picking sides the way he is. But I couldn't help it. I just love that whole bit.
And this is reminds me of another great trope of MASH. You know, Frank is always so full of self-importance and blah, blah, blah. You know, his self-worth is definitely beyond his actual value as a doctor or an officer. And then the situation turns and somehow emasculates him or minimizes him.
Right, yeah. That's great. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a whole lot else to say about Bananas, Crackers, and Nuts. As you said, it's I think it's probably one of their weaker episodes, and of course the ending is a little difficult to stomach through. So unless you have something else, I think we're going to wrap it up here, because there is another MASH-related thing that we need to talk about.
Okay.
So okay?
I'm good.
So, all right, cool. So we're going to wrap it up for Bananas, Crackers, and Nuts, but of course – normally, this is the part of the show where I end every episode and I say, hey, Fox Home Entertainment, let's get MASH on streaming. Why isn't it on streaming? Well, I am very happy to announce that MASH is now streaming. It is on Hulu, all 11 seasons, all 256/251, whatever number you want to assign to it, is on streaming. I am going to totally take credit for this because... thank you. As the Fire and Water Network seems to be able to create these things. Right after Shag and I started doing Digest Cast, Marvel started putting out digests. Not too long after we started doing an Aquaman podcast, we have an Aquaman movie coming out and a Firestorm TV show. So we're making things happen. So I'm going to totally take credit for MASH being on Hulu. You can get the whole series. It's been digitally retouched up. They look beautiful. They look probably better than they looked when they aired in 1972. There are a couple of minor changes worth noting. One is the laugh track is in place, and unlike the DVDs, you can't turn it off. That doesn't bother me because I grew up on the laugh track, so it just isn't distracting. But I know that there are people who didn't grow up on the laugh track, and they find it just really weird that to hear all these people laughing. I mean, does that bother you?
I grew up with laugh tracks on TV shows. It's never been a thing that's detracted, but been a detractor for me.
Okay, so it's all right with you that it works out.
Yeah.
So the laugh track is fine. They've split the episode, so every hour long has been split into two shows. That's a little weird. I wish they didn't do that because, like, in particular, Welcome to Korea, I think, is one of their finest shows, and it really works as an hour-long block. It doesn't need that cut in the middle. Why they do it that way, I don't know. I guess it's probably the way the shows are syndicated, is that it's MASH is slotted into a half-hour time slot, and if you have an hour show, you got to cut it up. That doesn't bother me a whole lot. I wish they didn't, but it's fine. They have reframed the show to make it fit your screen, because now most people's televisions are wider than they are high, or they're wider than they used to be. And to fill the screen, they have blown up MASH a little bit. And I kind of wondered, well, what am I losing? Because on some level, if you're stretching the picture to go all the way to the left and right, it means you're blowing up the top and bottom a little bit. So they are cutting the top and bottom off slightly. It's been pretty unnoticeable to me. The one episode that I purposely jumped ahead to watch to see where the edit is season 9. There's an episode called Depressing News, which involves a giant load of tongue depressors being delivered to the 477, like a million tongue depressors. And in that episode, there's a scene of Hawkeye and BJ walking onto the campground, like in front of the hospital, and the shot was framed incorrectly, and you can see Alan Alda is wearing brand new bright blue Adidas sneakers.
Oh.
And clearly he just wore those because he figured they weren't going to show on camera, and the cameraman accidentally caught them. I mean, the color blue is very rarely seen on MASH, so yeah. It really jumps out at you. But when you watch it on Hulu, it's cut. You see it, like, you don't see below Hawkeye's ankles. So I'm like, okay, they definitely are cutting the tops and bottoms off a little bit of the screen. Not too terribly noticeable. Yeah. So all of those are fine. I do have one complaint, though, and this is a big one. And I even went on the MASH Twitter account, MASHcast Twitter account, to talk to send a message to Fox Home Entertainment. Season 4, The Interview, which is probably MASH's finest episode in terms of its artistry. That episode, of course, was shot in black and white. Well, the episode on Hulu is in color. No. No, 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 no. That is unacceptable. The whole reason that show is in black and white is because it is made to look like it was actual newsreel footage shot in 1951-52. And the black and white part is what gives it that verisimilitude. And yet, they have it in color. And that is just wrong. And it's even got, the show even still has the voiceover at the beginning of the episode saying, the following is in black and white. Meanwhile, you're looking at a color picture. So my only guess as to why this is that, of course, the show was probably shot in color and then developed on film in black and white, because you would want the original negative to be in color. It was developed in black and white, and then when Fox Home Entertainment went back to digitally remaster it, they probably were accessing the color version, not the black and white version. And whoever was doing it wasn't paying attention that, hey, wait a minute, this show was supposed to be in black and white. And they just redid it in color. That is the one thing I think that Hulu, Fox Home Entertainment needs to change. They need to reissue that episode to Hulu in black and white. It's crazy that they think audiences can't deal with the idea that the episode's in black and white.
Yeah, that's really weird. And you'll notice, you know, a lot of these streaming services, I don't know about Hulu because I don't have it, but like Netflix, I can't think of any black and white movies that are on it. Not really.
They don't have much. Yeah. Don't have much.
And it's weird. And not too much in the way of older movies anyway. Right. Like, and I think it's sad that that is looked upon as not commercially viable. And yet they'll keep tripe like Sharknado.
Right.
You know, available for streaming. Like, if the film is supposed to be art, and as, you know, a student of history, I want to see older artistic films. But I guess they're just want, you know, things from maybe the last 30 years tops to maximize, you know, the 18 to 25 market.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, a lot of the older films now are on Filmstruck or Turner Classic Movies app. And that's, you know, I mean, people only have so much money. You know, there's only so many pay channels you can subscribe to before you're kind of maxed out. And it is sad that Netflix has such a paltry selection. But I'm telling myself that the Interview episode was done almost as a mistake, that it was just processed and nobody that was doing it was paying attention, not that it was done on purpose, like, oh, people can't handle this. Because who's watching MASH at this point other than fans? Well, and if you're a fan, you want to see the black and white version. You don't want to see this color version. That's weird.
Yeah. Well, and what is even more weird is that somebody is going over this and restoring these things, and you think someone who's going over something with such a fine tooth like that would be paying enough attention to detail that, oh wait, this one's supposed to be black and white.
Yeah, there's a voiceover at the beginning saying this show is in black and white. So that's very strange to me. And like I said, I am so thrilled that MASH is on Hulu. It's on a platform that people are going to watch it on, and you have the only way you're going to get new fans of the show is to have it accessible via a streaming service. So I didn't want to complain too heavily, but that is the one thing. I'm like, you guys have got to fix that. You have got to you could just take what you did, the remastered version, just run it through whatever magic filter you need to run it through and spit out the black and white version and then send that to Hulu. And you know what? If you want to have both versions, if people just can't stand black and white, have both versions. You can have a thing. This is a black and white in color. I mean, for God's sakes, they reissued Mad Max Fury Road in black and white, like last year, because George Miller was so in love with the black and white version. So people can tolerate black and white. Their heads are not going to explode if it's in black and white. So that's – I begged Fox Home Ed, please fix that. Other than that, I'm happy with the rest of it. I'm happy that it's all part of the syndication package. It's all on Hulu. The last episode, is part of Hulu. A lot of times that's cut off as part of the syndication package, but there it is. So I'm very excited, and I will. And MASHcast will take a victory lap. That it only took us 6 episodes to call for streaming, and now we've got it on streaming. So I can only hope that it lasts on Hulu longer than Netflix, because it was on Netflix for like a month.
Right.
So I'm hoping Hulu keeps it for a long time. So that is going to do it. We're not going to have to after this. We're not going to have to call for streaming anymore, which is very exciting. We've been watching Matt. We've been binge watching MASH here at home because it's just so fun to be able to watch them again with a click. And we leave it on for the dog and the cat when we go for a walk and stuff. So because they enjoy MASH too. So that's going to do it for Bananas, Crackers, and Nuts. Nicholas, thank you for coming back. I always appreciate it. It's always fun to talk to you.
Thank you. I feel the same way, Rob.
All right. Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find my show, Comic Reflections, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google, whatever the Google one is, and Podbean.
Very cool. All right. What are you going to be? What do you have coming up? And what are you going to be covering?
It'll have dropped by the time this episode airs, but. My first new episode with my new producer in our new studio, It Sounds Fantastic, is dropping Monday, July 9th. And coming up, I've got Hub from Tighten Up the Defense as a guest. And we are going to be talking about both issues of Brother Power the Geek.
Oh, that's great. That's an interesting – I love Tighten Up the Defense. That's a fun show. And Brother Power the Geek,
defense. Man. Defense. You put the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
I do that sometimes.
Yeah,
that ought to be fun. That ought to be a fun show.
Oh yeah, yeah. So yeah, but it's a Silver and Bronze Age talk, pretty much always, and it's going to be back to weekly now, and it'll be sometimes with just my new producer and I hosting, and sometimes with guests. We're going to have it about 50-50. It should be a lot of fun.
Very cool. That's
so great. Jumping on for new listeners.
All right. Very cool. So we'll have the link to it in the show notes, of course. If you want to listen to back episodes of this show, you can go to the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com, and we're on the various platforms and stuff. And we're talking MASH all the time over on Twitter, which is at MASH477Cast. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll make sure you come back for the next episode. And until then, that is all.
Well, then tell him about the time he sedated you and then set both your arms and legs in plaster and hung you from the ceiling in traction ropes. and how when you came to, you thought you had 4 broken limbs. then Pierce came in, you see, and cut him down. Frank, I tell you, I will never forget the terror in your eyes, that look just before you hit the bed. Do you remember that one, Frank?